Dawn of Flame by Stanley G. Weinbaum. Chapter 8. Torment. Hall looked down at noon over Ormiston Valley, where Joaquin Smith was marching. At his side, Vale paused, and together they gazed silently over Seeluwe Road, now black with riding men and rumbling wagons, on their way to attack the remnant of the Confederation army in Seeluwe. But Ormiston was not entirely abandoned, for 300 soldiers and 200 horsemen remained to deal with the harriers, under Black Margot herself. It was not the policy of the master to permit so large a rebel band to gather unopposed in conquered territory within the empire. Despite the mutual hatred among rival cities, there existed a sort of enforced peace.
"Our moment comes tonight," Hall said soberly. "We'll never have a better chance than now, with our numbers all but equal to theirs, and surprise on our side."
Vale nodded. "The ancient tunnel was a bold thought, Hall. The harriers are shoring up the crumbled places. Father is with them."
"He shouldn't be. The aged have no place in the field."
"But this is his hope, Hall. He lives for this."
"Small enough hope.
Suppose we're successful, Vale. What will it mean save the return of Joaquin Smith and his army? Common sense tells me this is a fool's hunt, and if it were not for you, and the chance of fairer fighting than we've had till now, well, I'd be tempted to concede the master his victory."
"Oh, no!" cried Vale. "If our success means the end of Black Margot, isn't that enough? Besides, you know that half the master's powers are the work of the witch. Enoch, poor Enoch, said so."
Hall winced. Enoch had been one of the three marksmen slain outside the west windows, and the girl's words brought memory of his own part in that. But her words pricked painfully in yet another direction, for the vision of the princess that had plagued him all night long still rose powerfully in his mind, nor could he face the mention of her death unmoved. But Vale read only distress for Enoch in his face.
"Enoch," she repeated softly, "he loved me in his sour way. Oh, Hall, but once I had known you, I had no thoughts for him."
Hall slipped his arms around her, cursing himself that he could not steal his thought away from Margaret of Norlands, because it was Vale he loved, and Vale he wanted to love. Whatever spell the princess had cast about him, he knew her to be evil, ruthless, and inhumanly cold, a sorceress, a devil. But he could not blot her satanic loveliness from his inward gaze.
"Well," he sighed, "let it be tonight, then. Was it 4 hours past sunset? Good. The Empire men should be sleeping or gaming in Ty's tavern by that time. It's for us to pray for our gunpowder."
"Gunpowder? Oh, but didn't you hear what I told File Ormson and the harriers back there on the ridge? The casters of the spell are gone. Joaquin Smith has taken them to Seeluwe. I watched and listened from the kitchen this morning."
"The sparkers? They're gone?"
"Yes, they called them resonators.
"Resonators," said Hall, recalling old Einar's words.
"Something like that. There were two of them, great iron barrels on swivels, full of some humming and clicking magic. And they swept the valley north and south and east and west, and over towards Norse there was the sound of shots and the smoke of a burning building. They loaded them on wagons and dragged them away towards Seeluwe."
"They didn't cross the ridge with their spell," said Hall. Footnote 5.
The field of the Erden resonator passes readily through structures and walls, but it is blocked by any considerable natural obstruction, hills, and, for some reason, fog banks or low clouds. "The harriers still have powder."
"Yes," murmured Vale, drawing his arm closer about her.
"Tell me," she said suddenly, "what did she want of you last night?"
Hall grimaced. He had told Vale little enough of that discreditable evening, and he had been fearing her question.
"Treason," he said finally. "She wanted me to betray the Harriers."
"You? She asked that of you?"
"Do you think I would?"
countered Hall.
"I know you never would. Well, what did she offer you for betrayal?"
Again, he hesitated.
"A great reward," he answered at last. "A reward out of all proportion to the task."
"Tell me, Hall, what is she like, face to face?"
"A demon. She isn't exactly human."
"But in what way? Men say so much of her beauty, of her deadly charm. Hall, did you feel it?"
"I love you, Vale."
She sighed and drew yet closer.
"I think you're the strongest man in the world, Hall. The very strongest."
"I'll need to be," he muttered,
staring gloomily over the valley. Then he smiled faintly as he saw men plowing, for it was late in the season for such occupation. Old Marcus Ormiston was playing safe. Remembering the master's words, he was tilling every acre across which a horse could drag a blade. Vale left him in Ormiston village, and took her way hesitantly homeward. Hall did what he could about the idle shop, and when the sun slanted low, bought himself a square loaf of brown bread, a great slice of cheese, and a bottle of the still clear wine of the region. It was just as he finished his meal in his room that a pounding on the door of the shop summoned him.
It was an Empire man. "Hall Tarvish?" he asked shortly.
At Hall's nod, he continued,
"From Her Highness,"
and handed him a folded slip of black paper. The mountain youth stared at it. On one side, in raised gold, was the form of a serpent encircling a globe, its tail in its mouth, the Midgard serpent. He slipped a finger through the fold, opened the message, and squinted helplessly at the characters written in gold on the black inner surface.
"The scratching means nothing to me," he said.
The Empire man sniffed contemptuously.
"I'll read it," he said, taking the missive. "It says, follow the messenger to our quarters, and it's signed Margarita Imperii Regina, which means Margaret, Princess of the Empire." "Is that plain?" He handed back the note. "I've been looking an hour for you."
"Suppose I won't go," growled Hall.
"This isn't an invitation, Weed. It's a command."
Hall shrugged. He had small inclination to face Black Margot again, especially with his knowledge of the Harrier's plans. Her complex personality baffled and fascinated him, and he could not help fearing that somehow, by some subtle art, she might wring that secret from him. Torture wouldn't force it out of him, but those green eyes might read it. Yet, better to go quietly than be dragged or driven. He grunted assent and followed the messenger. He found the house quiet. The lower room where Joaquin Smith had rested was empty now, and he mounted the stairs again, steeling himself against the expected shock of Black Margot's presence. This time, however, he found her clothed, or half-clothed by Ormiston standards, for she wore only the diminutive shorts and shirt that were her riding costume, and her dainty feet were bare. She sat in a deep chair beside the table, a flagon of wine at hand, and a black cigarette in her fingers. Her jet hair was like a helmet of ebony against the ivory of her forehead and throat, and her green eyes like two emeralds.
"Sit down," she said as he stood before her. "The delay is your loss, Hall. I would have dined with you."
"I grow strong enough on bread and cheese," he growled.
"You seem to."
Fire danced in her eyes.
"'Oh, I am as strong as most men, "'but I believe those vast muscles of yours "'could overpower me as if I were some shrinking provincial girl. "'And yet—'
"'And yet what?'
"'And yet you are much like my black stallion Eblis. "'Your muscles are nearly as strong, "'but like him, I can goad you, drive you, lash you, "'and get you galloping in whatever direction I choose.'
"'Can you?' he snapped. "'Don't try it.'
"'But the spell of her unearthly beauty was hard to face. "'But I think I shall try it,' she cooed gently. "'Oh, do you ever lie?'
"'I do not.'
"'Shall I make you lie, then, Hall? "'Shall I make you swear such falsehoods "'that you will redden forever afterward at the thought of them? "'Shall I?'
"'You can't.'
"'She smiled. "'Then in altered tones, "'Do you love me, Hall?'
"'Love you? I hate—'
"'He broke off suddenly. "'Do you hate me, Hall?' "'she asked gently.
"'No,'
he groaned at last.
"'No, I don't hate you.'
"'But do you love me?' "'Her face was saint-like, earnest, pure. "'Even the green eyes were soft now as the green of spring. "'Tell me, do you love me?'
"'No!'
he ground out savagely, "'then flushed crimson at the smile on her lips.
"'That isn't a lie,' he blazed. "'This sorcery of yours isn't love. "'I don't love your beauty. "'It's unnatural.' Hellish, and the gift of Martin Sayre. It's a false beauty, like your whole life.
Martin Sayre had little to do with my appearance, she said gently. What do you feel for me, Hall, if not love?
I don't know. I don't want to think of it.
He clenched a great fist.
Love? Call it love if you wish, but it's a hell's love that would find satisfaction in killing you.
But here his heart revolted again.
That isn't so, he ended miserably. I couldn't kill you.
Suppose, she proceeded gently, I were to promise to abandon Joaquin, to be no longer Black Margot. "'And Princess of the Empire, but to be only Hull Tarvish's wife. "'Between Vale and me, which would you choose?'
"'He said nothing for a moment. "'You're unfair,' he said bitterly at last. "'Is it fair to compare Vale and yourself? "'She's sweet and loyal and innocent, but you are Black Margot.'
"'Nevertheless,' she said calmly, "'I think I shall compare us.'
"'Sora!'
the fat woman appeared.
"'Sora, the wine is gone. "'Send the Eldark's daughter here with another bottle and a second goblet.'
"'Hall stared appalled.
"'What are you going to do?'
"'No harm to your little weed. "'I promise, no harm.'
"'But—'
he paused. Vale's footsteps sounded on the stairs, and she entered timidly, bearing a tray with a bottle and a metal goblet. He saw her start as she perceived him, but she only advanced quietly, set the tray on the table, and back toward the door.
"'Wait a moment,' said the princess.
She rose and moved to Vale's side, as if to force the comparison on Hall. He could not avoid it. He hated himself for the thought. But it came regardless. Barefooted, the Princess Margaret was exactly the height of Vale in her low-heeled sandals, and she was the merest shade slimmer. But her startling black hair and her glorious green eyes seemed almost to fade the unhappy Ormiston girl to a colorless dun, and the coppery hair and blue eyes seemed water-pale. It wasn't fair.
Hall realized that it was like comparing candlelight to sunbeam, and he despised himself even for gazing.
"Hall," said the princess, "which of us is the more beautiful?"
He saw Vale's lips twitch fearfully, and he remained stubbornly silent.
"Hall," resumed the princess, "which of us do you love?"
"I love Vale,"
he muttered.
"But do you love her more than you love me?" Once again, he had recourse to silence.
"I take it," said the princess, smiling, "that your silence means you love me the more. Am I right?"
He said nothing.
"Or am I wrong, Hall?
Surely you can give little Vale the satisfaction of answering this question, for unless you answer, I shall take the liberty of assuming that you love me the more. Now do you?" He was in utter torment. His white lips twisted in anguish as he muttered finally,
"Oh, God! Then, yes!"
She smiled softly. "You may go," she said to the pallid and frightened Vale. But for a moment the girl hesitated.
"Hall," she whispered. "Hall, I know you said that to save me. I don't believe it, Hall, and I love you. I blame her."
"Don't," he groaned. "Don't insult her."
The princess laughed. "Insult me? Do you think I could be insulted by a bit of creeping dust as it crawls its way from cradle to grave?" She turned contemptuous green eyes on Vale as the terrified girl backed through the door.
"Why do you delight in torture?" cried Hall. "You're cruel as a cat. You're no less than a demon."
"That wasn't cruelty," said the princess gently. "It was but a means of proving what I said, that your mighty muscles are well broken to my saddle."
"If that needed proof," he muttered.
"It needed none. There's proof enough, Hall, in what's happening even now, if I judge the time rightly. I mean, your harriers slipping through their ancient sewer right into my trap behind the barn."
He was thunderstruck.
"You! Are you? You must be a witch," he gasped.
"Perhaps. But it wasn't witchcraft that led me to put the thought of that sewer into your head, Hall. Do you remember now that it was my suggestion, given last evening there in the hallway? I knew quite well that you'd put that bait before the harriers."
His brain was reeling.
"But why? Why?"
"Oh," she said indifferently, "it amuses me to see you play the traitor twice, Hall Tarvish."
End of chapter 8.